What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.
They were the heroes from the future. Teenagers protecting the universe from those that would sow the seeds of chaos. Each had unique powers and abilities. And though they often had their differences, they came together to save the day as the Legion of Superheroes. Now, you can be a part of their adventures and learn the history of the future in the Legion Clubhouse.
This week on the Legion Clubhouse, somehow we gotta get that genie back into the bottle.
Legion of Superheroes number 267, to bottle a genie. Published September 1980. Written by Jerry Conway with art by Jimmy James. Synopsis: can even the Legion stop an evil genie gone rogue?
I know, the last episode, we spent some time talking about the Legion of Superheroes appearance in Young Justice, Season 4, currently streaming on the HBO Max, so hopefully you guys enjoyed that a lot. I know several people commented, and several people also commented saying, Matthew, that they didn't even know that the Legion was in there. And then one person tipped us off and said, oh, did you see that last shot of Season 3 where Saturn Girl shows up? And it's like, yes, I did.
Yes, so, you did. That's how we got here.
Yeah, so I'm glad a lot of people got a kick out of that. This week, though, we got to Klaatu Barriktu Necktie and get a genie back into a bottle.
It's Kantu Barriktu Noodle. I don't know. But irony of ironies, Element Lad is going to die because of a lack of elements.
Which, I know people say space is a vacuum and the world is a vampire.
Uh-huh.
But in that vacuum,
and Brandy's a fine girl,
there is all of these elements just floating around. Hydrogen, helium,
though,
and oxygen. And his suit is covered in ice, which is made up of
injured.
What? What is ice made up of? It's made up of hydrogen and oxygen.
The frozen oxygen that's coming out of his trans suit is surrounding him, but he's unconscious. So the question is, can a Traumite transfer elements or transmute elements while unconscious? Can he sleep?
First of all, the big, more important question is, why does he need a trans suit?
To breathe in space.
No, he can just take the elements that are around him and convert that into breathable oxygen. And he should be able to take the carbon dioxide that's coming out of his body and transmute that into oxygen that he can then just rebreathe.
Let me ask you a question. You can climb a ladder, right?
I can.
Why does your house have stairs?
Because ladders go on the outside of the house. That's why.
I agree with you that Jen could do that, but I feel like in a combat situation in outer space, unless you're like a Superboy or a Mon-El where you're just like, I don't need air, go away, having the trans suit for, you know,
listen,
just such an emergency when you're unconscious.
Does Mon-El just breathe vacuumed air? Is that what he breathes?
Well, Kryptonians and Daxamites don't breathe in the pre-crisis reality. They have no need for oxygen.
Right. And in the post-crisis, Superman just takes a big lung full of air and holds it while he flies off into War World or wherever he flew off to after he killed Lois. Or after Lois died.
Spoilers.
Yeah, sorry, people, for a series that was kind of lame in 1987, 88. No, but here's the thing. Okay. If you can wave your hand and say, oh, Mon-El and Jonah and whoever else that you want can breathe or not breathe in space,
then
it makes sense.
Joe wears his trans suit because when he's flying, he's not invulnerable.
Right.
And it's the invulnerability.
But it would make sense that you could just hand wave and actually use some science to say that Element Lad can do all this stuff in space with the available molecules that are floating around. Now, granted, there's not a whole lot of them, but as I said, he could take the carbon dioxide. He could take a big breath, lung full of air as he exits the spacecraft one and then recycle that air indefinitely in his body. Right. That's all I'm saying.
I agree with you up to the point where Element Lad is unconscious and unable to do anything and is drifting in space with a head injury. So I think at this point, Element Lad having a transuit and not relying on his powers probably saved his life.
He's about to die in space, right? That's the whole thing.
But he's in a trans suit, which is providing some protection. And of course, he has his teammates. He has five teammates. Well, four teammates.
I think the more important thing that's actual science in this first little get up as we try to make Jan a victim here is that a duplicate girl. I think it's duplicate girl. Duo Damsel seals up his spacesuit with a space repair kit. And in reality, when astronauts go into space, they do have a spacesuit repair kit that goes with them. Basically, what's in this? I'm trying to see if I can find. Let's see. They have a repair kit that includes supplies to perform minor emergency repairs to the pressure bladder in the event of a puncture. The contents include repair patches, aka duct tape, or what's that stuff that they make that guy's always like, you got a leak in your boat? You can seal it with this spray-on stuff.
Slap chop.
Yeah, slap chop.
I think it's the equivalent of a bicycle tire repair kit, honestly.
And that's what this is. Also included in the repair kit are O-rings, cleaning pads, towels, lubricant, and instructions.
I had O-rings all the other day from Red Robin that were just amazing.
That goes all the way back to the very first Apollo missions. Well, especially in Apollo 11, as they were flying to the moon. But these kinds of things are very common to be included in your spacesuit, or for the Legion of Superheroes, their trans suits. But also, something that was kind of a big plot point in the Andy Weir, The Martian book, and the movie that was made from that. So it's kind of nice that we do get a little bit of real science in addition to all the magical hand waving that goes on here. Oh, speaking of magic, Matthew.
Cantu.
Yeah, Cantu. We find out that at some point, Cantu, not at just some point, 2,500 years ago, which if you do the math, would put Cantu's origin somewhere around the year 300 AD, right?
It's the 30th century. It's 2980.
Yeah, so subtract 2,500 from that.
So 400.
You get 300, yeah.
480.
Yes, well, somewhere around there. But when you subtract all that, it's like this is post all religions have been formed by this point, which I think is really, really weird. The myth of the genie or the jinns is part of religion that we talked about before. The tales in spoken language are supposed to predate this either 300 or 400 AD. The first written collection of Aladdin and the Scheherazade and 1001 Nights doesn't come around until 750 AD. So I don't know. It seems a little weird still.
Well, if it's the year 480, something weird happens, and then 200 years later, somebody invents a way to write it down. I don't know. I'm bothered by the fact that the Guardians of Oa are responsible for this huge chunk of mythology, theology, whatever you want to call it, this Middle Eastern story comes from blue people from space. That bugs me.
Why is that?
I don't
more
know.
So than just, the djinn are a race of aliens that fell to Earth and got bottled up by some stranger.
That's a Gene Roddenberry third grade plot. That's everybody you consider a deity is actually just somebody from another planet or another civilization.
Yeah.
This, I don't know. I feel like it's of the same piece. It's of the same level, but
of my concern with the appropriation and changing of the religion.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's been about one of the first times we've seen the Guardians in Legion continuity, isn't it?
Yeah. Did we? No, we have seen a Green Lantern, right? At this point, wasn't there a member or somebody is about to become a member of the Green Lantern Corps out of this Legion? Or am I thinking the next iteration?
You're thinking a little further down the line. I think it's closer to issue 300.
Okay.
I can't guarantee this is the first time we've seen the Guardians, but this is the first one that I can recall seeing the Guardians of Oa.
Yes, I would agree that this is the first time we've seen the Guardians, but I didn't know if this was the first time we'd seen, you know, the reference to kind of like Green Lanterns. Mm-hmm. That being said, if you're just going to misappropriate religious mythology, I guess I can forgive. And it's been a month since we last recorded an episode. So I can forgive that and say, OK, if you're going to do this, then you might as well throw the Owens in for good measure. Before the Green Lantern Corps, there were the Manhunters, but I don't think the Manhunters go back to 400 AD. So it probably was
go back millions of years.
Millions of years. OK, so the Manhunters should have been the ones that were stopping the Djinn, not the Owens. But if I could see that before the Owens or before the Manhunters, there were the Owens as the only source of protection. And then they seal them up, seal all these Djinn up in, you know, fabrications made bottles from the Great Battery. And then send all those thousands of bottles scattering across the universe, which means there's probably other Djinn out there. But for whatever reason, because we have learned that Earth is the center of everything, an inordinate a number of these genie bottles come crashing to Earth, which led to all of the myths and legends and whatnot.
I think that there's a subspace bypass.
Maybe.
Where things get caught, like Superman's pod and Hal Jordan's ring, all of these things get caught in like a funnel.
Yeah, that like some kind of effluvia that just vomits up junk onto our planet.
Yeah, exactly. Our planet is basically jetsam.
Yeah.
But, you know, when the Owens threw all these out, they're like a score, which is what, 20? 12? I don't know. But a bunch of gin bottles landed on Earth. And, you know, I know at the end of my weekend, sometimes there's a lot of gin bottles and you don't realize where you're 20. Throwing them.
Yeah.
Score is 20.
Yeah.
Okay. So the score is 20 to nothing. But yeah, when you're throwing gin bottles, sometimes, you know, they just land where they may. But
I guess
Kantu is coming to Earth because this comic book is written on Earth. But that's in universe.
Well, and going back into more of Kantu's history. At one point, whoever the last person was that let him out of his bottle said, get back in your bottle and get away from Earth or something like that. And so that's why he was on that ice planet where Duo Damsel and Bouncing Boy found him. And so the only solution is they realize, we weren't pedantic enough in our wishes to get Kantu or whatever the hell the guy's name
Kantu
to go away. And so they figured this time we must be exactly precise.
Right. Well, when he escaped the bottle on one dill X and or yes. nine, his bottle exploded. They told him to go back to a bottle that didn't exist. So right. he was able to ignore that as an impossible command. But, you know, itty bitty living space.
That's what I'm saying. You got to be pedantic. Yeah. You got to be exact when you're making a wish
you
with
have
a genie.
To be specific because genies are. I almost said a terrible thing. Genies are dicks is what it is.
I mean, you could have said jerks and that would have been just as good, but
I was kind of sliding it in between the word I almost said and then the word, you know, that jerks is fine too.
Uh-huh. Anyway, Kantu is making his way, cutting a path across the universe, very much like Omega, which is what I kind of found surprising, right? So like Omega was just making this beeline path from wherever he was, point A to point Earth. And destroying everything in his way. And it seems like Kantu is doing that exact same thing, which, of course, you know, the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. And of course, unless you're in space because space is curved, which point it would be a curved line. But regardless, I can't help but notice that many of the things that happen as Kantu is moving towards Earth feel very much like V'ger when he is going to returning to Earth in Star Trek, the motion picture or movie hasn't come out yet by 1980. Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, where the whale probe is shutting down everything as they pass.
Yeah. The motion picture came out in 79, so it definitely could have an influence on it.
I mean, not only do we get that, but we also get the planet Vulcan, which is where they're at. That's for those of you who are not familiar with this property called Star Trek. There are Vulcans in the Star Trek, and they come from that planet. But also, Vulcan is the Romulan god of fire, which is why this little colony is set up. I guess they're mining volcanoes in space. I mean, we've got volcanoes on Earth. You could just mine those there.
They're mining gems. They're basically mineralogical. But you know the thing that I do appreciate about this weird planet that we see for a split second?
Vulcan.
They intentionally, you can call it Vulcan if you like, they intentionally invert what in 1980 would be considered, and I definitely air quote traditional, but the gender roles, because we see a couple, yes. Kage and Rin. Rin is a kick-butt fighter pilot, and Kage is this weird guy who's like, I have intuition. Something's going to go wrong. She's like, pfah, your silly man's intuition. And she goes off to fight, and he stays home on Vulcan, you know, to, I don't know, take care of it. But it's interesting that they do that in this issue. And the married couple, Bouncing Boy, figures out the mystery while Duo Damsel fights and kicks butt and saves Element Lad's life. And she's the action hero, and he's the thoughtful, sensitive one having a cup of tea in the ship. And I kind of feel like it's interesting to see Conway intentionally doing this. And it feels a little bit like, you know, during the earliest episodes where we're like, hey, accidental feminism, this feels intentional throughout the issue. And I kind of dig that.
Yeah, it was interesting to see that.
It's Lornu that figures everything out and actually saves the day. You know, when she's like, okay, you can kill one of me, but the other one will kill you.
Or what? Like, hop, hip, hop. The death or the bottle. I guess I'll go drink myself to death.
And I mean, that is hardcore. She's literally like, your choice is death if you try and take one of me down. I'm like, go Duo Damsel. That's, yeah. I mean, that is impressive.
Now, of course, all of this happens once they get to Earth. Mm-hmm. And you have to figure, wait, Kantu had a very big head start on these guys. Mm-hmm. So once again, we use a Star Trek idea of warp drive so that they can get there before he does, so that they can spring the ultimate trap.
Right.
Interesting thing about, go ahead.
I am bothered about one thing.
Which is?
When they get to New Damascus, it looks like
old Damascus,
1500s.
Yeah, you know.
I mean, it does not look like the 30th century. It literally looks like,
you know, all those cultures and countries that aren't white, they're always backwards.
Yeah, I mean, we have a guy with a wooden cart filled with bottles and tchotchkes.
It is so tone deaf. I was really hoping when I saw that, I was like, and I was joking, ladies and gentlemen, a moment ago. I hope you caught the sarcasm there. If not, get your mitt ready, because here it comes. I was really hoping for, I want to see some, you know, we have Afrofuturism.
Right.
I was really hoping for some kind of Arabic futurism kind of thing where it's like, go wild, dear artist, and cut this place up and really make it look like, you know, Baghdad in the year 4000.
Right. Where, you know, you kind of go nuts and you can take that aesthetic and then combine it with the weird future tech. But what we instead get is this, you know, little town in the desert with wooden. It's not. Mm-hmm. It's not.
And yeah, it's really tone deaf.
Well, and it would have been tone deaf. This is the thing that's important. I said last issue that this story doesn't feel like a Legion story. It feels like maybe a Justice League or a Titans side tale.
Mm-hmm.
But even in 1980, the portrayal of Damascus, the way they're portraying it, would have been retrograde. So I'm not sure exactly what is going on with the visuals here. I mean, Jimmy Janes is the penciler, and I believe he's being inked by Dave Hunt. Dave Hunt's a pretty solid inker, but I don't know. I did not like that, and it really bugged me.
Yeah. For those of you wondering about warp drive, we're getting closer and closer to warp drive every day, a functioning model. There are a couple of plans on the books. One of them is Miguel Alcubierre, I guess is how you would say his name. In 1994, he developed an idea of how warp drive would work, and people are working on making that model a reality. And even though we're probably 30, 40, 50, 100 years from it actually being put into practical use, it is interesting that we now have something that is theoretically possible and not just some hand wave of you can't go past 10 kind of proclamation. But it does look rather fascinating. So you can go up to YouTube and find some more information on that. Also, go look up the Ion Drive, I think, is the other one where they can't figure out why this engine, which is just like the dopiest engine available. It's not like using off the shelf parts at Radio Shack. Why this engine is actually producing more thrust than it's taking in. And so it's really kind of cool to go and check that out as well. So as far as space travel goes, we're getting, science fiction is getting closer to becoming science fact. The only problem is there's only one spaceship and they burned out the warp drive engine.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that's most frustrating about this is only half the issue.
Yeah. Oh, we should say how this ends, right? They decide that the safest place to put this being of infinite power is on the moon, where, you know, nobody's going to go.
Push him on the moon, Lornu. That made me mad too.
It really would have been. I mean, at the very least, they could have put him on Pluto, because back then Pluto was a planet, and they could have put it on there so that when we come up to the year 2000. All these school kids that are picking up these old comics and go, what the heck's a Pluto? And they'd never be able to find it or the bottle again. So there you go. It saves itself in scientific logic.
Dwarf planet. It's still a planet. But yeah, they need to put it under lock and key in the basement of Legion headquarters.
They need to wrap it up in some of that,
Inertron,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know where they need to do? They need to put it somewhere where no one will find it.
I know what they should do. They should feed it
to Matter Eater Lad.
They should feed it to Matter Eater Lad.
What? He's already mad. I mean,
he's already eaten the wish machine. He might as well just eat a genie at the same time, and they will cancel each other out. His sanity returns. Hooray for all of us.
See, that was my thing. I'm like, they could lock it up in the basement, but that's how we got here. Yeah. The miracle machine. I mean, that's why they destroyed and rebuilt the headquarters in the first place. But
yep.
Duo Damsel saves the day. And also, at the end of this story, Element Lad is like, you guys should rejoin the Legion.
Yeah, we'll think about it.
They never say it.
No, they said, we'll think about it, right? They said, we're going to talk about it.
The characters are going to stick around for about another 2 years, but they never actually say they've rejoined on active duty, but they keep showing up.
Mm.
So I'm wondering if Conway forgot to write a story where they said yes.
Maybe they're just trying it out. Maybe they're just like, we'll hang around, and then if we decide that we want to officially join, we'll rejoin. But for now, we're just going to hang around and be, your cousin who comes for a visit and doesn't leave. Drinks all my gin gold so he can stay fat and bouncy. Oh, hey,
okay.
That's only half of the issue, Matthew, because now we have to spend another half of the issue taking a tour of the Legion clubhouse and figuring out where flight rings come from.
Yeah, it's interesting because.
So how much of this, I gotta ask you, because a lot of it is flashback stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking that none of the flashback stuff is stuff that was ever printed previously, because we've read all of the issues. But what I find fascinating is in the flashbacks, they draw everything like it was in a 1960s story of the Legion.
Yeah. Steve Ditko handles the art here, and it's better than it could be. Dave Hunt does some good inking, but the flashback is correct up to a point. Legionnaire Lemon and or mm-hmm. Marvel Lad.
Yeah.
Did happen back in Adventure 305.
Yeah.
He did invent Element 152. As part of his joining, and that anti-gravity element is what became the flight rings back in Adventure 329. There's about a 2-year gap between the 305 and the 329. Exactly a 2-year gap, honestly, because it's 24 issues. I'm good at math. But the story that we get here, this flashback, is all new. This is all fresh stuff. So everybody's in their old costumes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to see, you know, Ditko, who at the time that these stories would have come out, 63, 64, 65, was drawing Spider-Man and Doctor Strange, seeing him apply his style to the classic Legion is kind of fun. Because he's more, I mean, he's definitely more animated than John Fort, who, don't get me wrong, I love his work, but it's very stiff. You remember when Beast Boy died and his body just locked into a stiff position?
Yeah.
This is just, you know, kind of crazy, wacky, especially Mon-El at one point in this issue looks like he's dancing a jig.
He might be.
But, yeah. But we are introduced to an idiot, I mean, a villain called Vibrex.
As soon as this turned into a, oh, we're going to tell you how the flight rings came about, I was like, I don't really care. And if you want to call this vibrating metal Vibrex, fine, but it certainly sounds a lot like some other metal that you might have the first part of the word vibration in, like, I don't know, vibranium. So yeah. I kind of checked out about halfway through this issue. It was a whole lot of, I don't care. This is you get really irritated, Matthew. This is something that irritates Matthew, ladies and gentlemen. When someone attempts to fill in mythology, and Matthew will say, they're answering a question that nobody answered.
Asked.
And that is exactly what's happening in this issue.
Yes. There are two good things about the flashback with Vibrex. One is the fact that the villain is like, oh no, you Legionnaires, I'll kill you. And Brainiac 5 comes in with a sock in the jaw, like a mean right cross. And I'm like,
yeah, that's the start of him starting to flip out.
Right. And this is the most detailed look at a flight ring that we've seen in forever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, back in the day, the Legionnaires started out with jetpacks in Adventure 247.
Oh, I thought it was flying platforms.
The flying platforms came later. And then they went to jet belts. The jet belts and the flying platforms, I think, coexisted. You know, Legion Omnicom is out there, and I think they will probably tell us. But when the flight belts were a thing for a while, then the Legion switched to flight rings and gave the flight belts to the Legion of Substitute Heroes. Mm-hmm. This is basically a story that explains why they gave up the flight belts 15 years earlier. So on the one hand, yay, filling in some backstory, you know, a very 80s kind of thing. But on the other hand, what a weird thing to obsess over explaining.
I guess there's probably some nerds out there that were really like, do you ever sit and think when the flight ring came about and how it came there? And I'm sure that this was something that, even though we haven't read every single letters column, I bet there's a letters column out there where Timmy in Des Moines is like, Dear DC Comics, I'm a 12-year-old boy. I was always wondering, where did the flight ring come from? And then they were like, well, I guess we have to write a story about it, because one of these days, someone's going to want to make their own flight ring, and we want to make it as detailed as we possibly can. So thank you, Steve Ditko.
I believe that this is the issue that first draws the line between Mon-El's invention of Element 152 and the existence of the flight ring. But I could be wrong, because part of me thinks that maybe in the first appearance of the flight, I'd have to go back, and I'm not going to read Adventure 329 in the middle of a sentence. But I think this may be the story that actually connects the two.
Mm.
So, but even then, you're like, why would you take a half an issue and create this weird, you know, pink striped villain? And you know, really what it boils down to is the Brainiac 5 right cross and the moment where they accidentally draw Cosmic Boy in the wrong costume. And what it means is the colorist accidentally did skin tones instead of pink and the costume is exactly the same. Mm-hmm. That's literally the things that make this story any kind of fun for me. Where somebody just for one panel was like, yep, that's what Cosmic Boy's suit looks like now. Bye. Mm-hmm. That just cracked me up.
Element 152, mm-hmm. I wish they would kind of name it Vibranium or whatever that they want to name it, but the official name is Unpentbium, Unpentbium. Unpentbium is the temporary name for Element 152. Let's see. The elements that live in this column can last, have half-lives that are less than an hour, and most are under 1 second. So there you go.
So that's actual science.
Yeah, no, that's actual science. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Ooh. So that is the temporary name of element 152 is unpentium. Yeah.
Unipentium. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
So there you go. There you go.
It's a comic.
Little bit of science, a little bit of fact, a little bit of seltzer.
Legion of Superheroes number 268. Life After Life After Life. Published October 1980. Written by J.M. DeMatteis with art by Steve Ditko. Synopsis. An immortal alien targets the Legion for revenge.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, we still have more stories to share with you. We have a Legion 268 with 8 extra pages of content. And you know you're going to need those 8 extra pages when your story starts out with Dream Girl screaming, I've had the most horrible dream. You're all going to die. Dream Girl always
that has. About every 5 issues.
I know. Anytime that we have Dream Girl in one of these issues, it's always like, I've just had the most powerful dream. And it foretells the death of someone very close. You mean my cousin? Yes, yes, your cousin. Your cousin's name, his name is Buh. I think it's a B, a C.
Okay.
A Barry. A Barry. Yes, Barry, Barry, yes. Oh, yes, your cousin Barry is in danger. You must rush to him now.
Do not compare Nora Null to freaking John Rock. I don't even remember the guy's name. Readers. I hate them.
Anybody that's a cold reader, anybody, because that's kind of what happens with Dream Girl is it's just like, we have this story, but we need to get our heroes from into this situation. I know. Let's make sure Dream Girl is around and she has the most powerful dream ever.
Is it anything weirder than, you know, oh my God, a puzzle that only Brainiac 5 can figure out, or oh my God, only Chameleon Boy can sneak into this area.
But it's not always like Brainiac sitting around going, and I'm the only one that can foretell this powerful puzzle. It's always Dream Girl with like the lamest things. And then I saw you guys running down a dark, a tunnel? Yes, yes, a dark tunnel.
You know what it is, honestly? Do you remember in every episode of Super Friends, there was always a channel?
I'll
or
form
an ocean.
A bucket of water.
Yeah, exactly. It's what we like to call this is a job for Aquaman. You have to give Dream Girl her due, and her due is freaky Cassandra truth. But I mean, it's definitely something we've seen many, many times before.
We have to introduce Space Mark Twain in this issue somehow. Why not a trippy dream from the trippy girl?
It's Disco Bondage Mark Twain, because you can't spell Dr. Mayavale without it.
Dr. Mayavale, this is a crazy character. What are you going to say?
The thing that I like is I remember when I bought this issue and I looked at this cover and went, oh my God, this guy looks so cool with his big hair and his red eyes and his Salvador Dali mustache and his six
What's
arms.
What's wrong with you?
And boy, he does not look that cool inside.
Yeah, this issue, I don't know how to explain this. So Dr. Mayavale,
yes, Mayavale
is someone Mayavale. Who, I mean, I'm going to call him, yeah, Mayavale.
Mayavale.
Mayavale or Mayavale, Mayavale. It doesn't matter.
Mayavale.
Doesn't matter because this guy, in all of his lives has been a good person. And so this issue really kind of turns into a lot of karma and reincarnation discussions, which I think are very fascinating. Past lives, is certainly a thing that, is introduced, you know, and what, for whatever reason, Dr. Mayavale happens to be reincarnated as like Caesar and Cleopatra and only important people throughout history. Mm-hmm. And each time there is a reincarnated version of one of the members of the Legion of Superheroes, in this case, Chameleon Boy, Karate Kid, and Dream Girl, that all are reincarnated and just cause him no end of trouble. For example, a Karate Kid, it was Brutus when Dr. Maivale was Caesar and killed him. And so we get into this now. Dr. Maivale has all through his life been a good person in all of his past lives. And so he figures that, you know, you got to balance the scales. If all of my past incarnations have been good people, you know, like Caesar, if they've all been quote unquote good people, then I must go the yin to that yang. And now I will be evil in all of my next incarnations. I will just be an evil person. And I'm going to start by killing the people that tried to cause me harm in my past lives. And so I'm going to take them to Westworld and I'm going to torture them.
Yeah. See, I read it a little differently when he was like, you guys coincidentally are definitely part of my past lives. I read it as he's a little wacky in the wiki woo. And he's just grabbing whoever is there and telling them, you were part of my past life and now I have to kill you.
I don't know. I don't know, because he comes from a race of people where it seemed like past lives was a real thing. I don't know. There's a lot of like Kung Fu, the TV series Kung Fu that's in here. You know, it's like, oh, young Padawan, when you can snatch this pebble from my hand, you too shall become the master of the Force. And it's just like the guy is like, I studied the light all this time. And now I realize in this life I must study the dark. And I don't know. It is some kind of weird, trippy thing. If this was something that came out in like 72 or something like that, I would be like, oh, yeah, all this spiritual reincarnation stuff, all this heavy emphasis into karma, the whole Kung Fu television series influence with David Carradine, that would make a lot of sense. But by 1980, I know past lives and regression therapy and all that stuff is still a big deal. Mm-hmm. But this just really felt like a story that was not of the right time to me.
Yeah, I agree in more ways than one, honestly, because this is a very early work by J.M. DeMatteis, who I remember from Legion of Superheroes, but you probably remember from the Bwahaha Justice League. But DeMatteis has always been into, you know, mm-hmm. Grateful Dead kind of crazy stuff. But this does feel like it's out of place for 1980. It's definitely out of place for 2980. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, this isn't a Conway issue. Maybe we're going to get a Legion story. No, we're not. It's all reincarnation and karma. And he's no more interested in doing like superhero science fiction than Conway is. And I think it's hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, it makes for a fascinating read. It's kind of like when you read Jack Kirby's The Eternals and you realize, mm-hmm. oh, Jack Kirby is just, just cribbing from Chariot of the Gods. From Eric Von Daniken.
Kirby is definitely into all that crazy stuff. And I think that this is honestly a creator going, hey, I'm kind of fascinated by past lives. Can I turn it into a story?
And don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with that. I just think that trying to slam all of that into however many pages this is. I mean, we do get 8 extra pages of content, 20 pages. It almost feels like, number one, that this should have been stretched out a little bit more, but it's nice that we have just a little filler issue here to kind of cleanse the palate and make you go, hey, wait a minute.
This didn't cleanse my palate, man. dirtied everything up.
Yes, especially when there's a moment where Dream Girl is captured wearing her normal clothes, and then when she finds herself ready to be the sacrificial lamb on the altar, she's dressed in something totally different. And it's like wait a minute. How'd she change her clothes? Wait a minute. Who changed her clothes? Dr. Maivale.
Fast hands and 7 of them.
Yeah.
But yeah. And I think that there are some things in here that are problematic for me on a number of levels. Of course, the representation of the Cherokee culture of whatever it's supposed to
be. Yeah. There's a whole thing where, who was it? Chameleon Boy, somehow betrayed was a part of the Cherokee Nation and betrayed Dr. Maivale,
and who was his chief. But
chief,
Maivale is wearing a full-on cartoon headdress, and
yeah,
it's weird because they're like Chameleon Boy is lying there and he's about to be crushed by horses, and I'm like, but isn't he made of like Jell-O pudding?
I know, and he turns into a snake to get away.
You know, One thing that really bugs me about this is we see Karate Kid in ancient Rome.
Yeah.
We see Chameleon Boy in the Old West, so the 1860s to 1890s, give or take.
Right, right.
But we see Chameleon Boy first. Maya Vale isn't even going back in time in the correct order.
No.
Because then he jumps to like the 1970s where he's like a Waka Chicka Waka. That's where he grew his mustache, honestly.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man.
But
and grew out his fro.
Yeah.
So you know, I can forgive a lot of that just in the way that he's trying to take down each one of these guys. And certainly if you've ever watched Doctor Who, you know that those stories are not linear. Doctor Who can jump into any time period. And again, if we're going to go through the whole karma reincarnation, we're going to go down that rabbit hole of all this stuff is real and past lives are real and the force is real and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. At some point you get to the concept of time isn't real or time isn't linear. So you exist in all time. And so you end up saying, well, yes, there is a version of me that exists in the Old West in the 1860s, 1870s, just like there's a version of me that exists in ancient Rome, just like there's a version of me that exists in the 1970s. And it doesn't matter because we're not linear, as our favorite unstuck character in time does it. So does Dr. Maya Vale.
No, this is just dumb.
No, I mean, I've looked at all of these things, and I have spent a lot of time looking at karma and looking at reincarnation. I'm not saying that I am the reincarnation of Henry VIII or anything like that, but I've spent some time talking with a lot of people about time and concepts, especially when you look into Eastern philosophy and belief systems and how karma works and those kinds of things. So I see a lot of that being forced in here, but for 1980, this just seems like a story that's out of place. Had this story happened in the late 60s and early 70s, I'd been like, oh man, this is just jumping in to the hippie culture of the time. And it picks right up from that. But here it just is crazy. The other thing that is kind of crazy is that, as I've talked about before, I like how they're taking these groups of legionnaires and they're all off doing their own thing. And this group of legionnaires are still with RJ Brand and the Star Force in building RJ's company back up and creating stars and all those kinds of things. But the way that Karate Kid delivers his report back to HQ, it's like, these are the voyages of the Legion of Superheroes. Come with me now as I tell you another thrilling adventure. And everyone's back at the Legion headquarters going, oh my gosh, this is just fascinating. Who knew? That's the weirdest part of, I can forgive a lot of the other silly stuff, but that is like the weirdest part, right? These are the voyages of the RJ Brand.
Yeah, that's weird. And the visuals are even stranger because,
I know, right? Everything takes place
in
his
eye. Boy's eye. And then it's just like,
yeah.
Woo. But you know what? There is exactly one and a half good things about Legion of Superheroes.
Let me guess.
268.
Okay, go ahead.
One is the cover, which we'll get to in a moment. The half is that at the point where Dream Girl is awake, she's tied up on the table. He's undressed her and put her in this flimsy little negligee, and she's seeing him torturing her partners and going, oh my God, this is exactly the horror that I saw. She realizes I'm the only one here, busts the ropes with sheer strength and beats the fro off of Dr. Maya Vale. Literally just leaps up and karate kicks him in the face, punches him, does a judo throw, smashes him into the wall. It's amazing because she's just like, you know what?
Yeah, I'm mad as hell. I'm not going to take it anymore.
Exactly. The damsel is not going to be distressed. The boys can't save her. She's going to save herself. And she just smacks him down. It's kind of hilarious how easily she beats this creep down. And
yeah,
I kind of found that entertaining up to a point in an issue that's really, really bad.
Well, you forgot the other part that is the most fascinating part of this issue. It's when Dr. Maya Vale says, oh, I should have anticipated this. I must not be evil enough. I will go away now and disappear, and I will study the dark side even more, and then I will come back and get
Maya
you,
Vale,
Legionnaires. And then, so that means, you know, like in 10, 12 issues, maybe like once a year or twice a year or something, just like Mr. Mixiel Spitalik, Dr. Maya Vale is going to come back and try to torment members of the Legion of Superheroes by claiming that they were, you know, Tutankhamun's mosquito. I was Tutankhamun and you were the mosquito that killed me. And this is just going to go on for years and years and years. And fans of the series are going to be sitting there going, yes, another Dr. Maya Vale issue. Cannot wait to buy this off the stand. So we have that to look forward to, don't we, Matthew?
Are you threatening me?
I mean, he says he's going to return. Why would you say I'm going to return and then never return?
Well, he never returned, so I suppose we'll have to ask him.
Yet.
The reason why he never returned is this is a bad issue, and he's a bad character, and everybody involved quickly realized that. And literally, if you read the Legion of Superheroes, who's who in the Legion, even they are like, we're not sure if he was crazy or if he was actually, you know, reincarnating, but he was probably crazy.
We have come to the end of another Legion Clubhouse. Thank you, everyone, for joining us this time. Matthew, what did we learn this week?
We learned that a good cover by George Perez doing his first Legion work can almost but not quite save a god-awful comic book.
We also learned that space elevators are not imaginary sci-fi stuff. They are real. They might be made real soon.
And we learned that Vibrex and Dr. Maya Vale were both villains who were given in flashbacks, and thus we should never flashback again because these guys sucked.
Thank you again for joining us this week on the Legion Clubhouse. Hey, if you enjoy the show, spread it around. Share the love. Don't keep it to yourself. Tell your other Legion of Superhero friends that, hey, they need to be checking out this show. And thank you already for all the love that you have been sharing around the world. And then if you want to see this show continue, which I think many of you do, whether it's to point out everything that we've made a mistake on or to compliment us on all the content that we have been delivering to you, consider becoming a patron over at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Until next time, I'm Vixarate Edimata Maya Vale. So many words in this show, man.
And I'm appalled.
The Legion Clubhouse is a production of Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC, and is produced by Steven Schleicher. Your hosts were Matthew Peterson and Steven Schleicher. You can follow Matthew at Mighty King Cobra and Steven at Major Spoilers. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Legion Clubhouse. If you have questions or comments, send them to podcast@majorspoilers.com. I'm Jason Inman. Until next time, eat it, Grandpa.
This podcast is copyright 2021 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.